Welcome to tonight's episode of Well-Rounded Corners. I'm Ruth Ann.
And I'm Robert.
And we're delighted to have with us this evening a very special guest, and we'll get to him in just a moment. But first, I'd like to remind everyone about our website, wellroundedcorners.com. You can listen to all of our past shows there for free, and you can also find us on iTunes by searching Well-Rounded Corners. If you subscribe to us on iTunes, all new shows automatically will download to your computer or iPod within 48 hours of broadcast. You can also listen to us in the archives of our BBS radio page or live every other Tuesday on BBS Radio Channel 1.
Yes, that's right. And we are very fortunate to have with us Courtney Brown, PhD. He is a mathematician and social scientist who teaches in the Department of Political Science at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. Independent of his work at the university, he's also a leading scholar on the subject of remote viewing, as it is done using procedures that were developed by the United States military and used for espionage purposes, or procedures that are derivative of those methodologies. Courtney, it's just amazing to have you with us. I can't express that enough.
Well, Robert and Ruth Ann, I want to say thank you so much for inviting me. It's an honor to be here, and you have had a host of very interesting guests, including Angela Thompson Smith, who's a great remote viewer recently. So your audience is all primed and ready to go on this subject.
Yeah, we've talked about remote viewing quite a bit. And I think they know the basics, but if you want to just hit the highlights and sort of describe a little bit about anything that I missed,
sure,
about yourself and your institute.
Remote viewing is a mental procedure, and it's done in the normal waking state of consciousness, and it's always done in a state that's called blind, which means that the remote viewers are never, ever, ever told what the focus of their perception is supposed to be. In the old days, they used to use the word psychic, but we don't use the word psychic anymore because the science of remote viewing is so much more advanced now, and also the procedures that are being used are so much more involved. And so these are procedures that were developed by the United States military originally and used for espionage purposes. And I'm the leading scholar in the subject, the leading academic in the subject of remote viewing as it is performed using these military or military-derived procedures. Now, it's a bit of a joke when I say that because I'm the only scholar, the only academic anywhere in any university, so I can easily say I'm the leading because I'm the only. But I say that in large part to poke fun at my academic colleagues who are too hesitant to jump into a field like this just because of the professional risk associated with it. It's actually one of the most interesting topics on the planet Earth that anyone could ever go into. It touches on so many fields, not just physics, the nature of reality, quantum mechanics, but it also touches on a revolution in the social sciences when we discover and we look at what we've discovered in remote viewing. The issue of what society actually is much more complex than what we thought it was, including extraterrestrial society, multiple universe societies. I mean, it's fascinating. But anyway, the procedures are such that one basically goes into a room with a stack of paper and a pencil without any information at all about what they're supposed to be perceiving. And they do the procedures mechanically and come out an hour later with 10 to 20 pages of detailed information about the target. The target is the thing that they're supposed to be focusing on. And the person who decides what that is called the tasker. And under ideal circumstances, the remote viewer has no contact with the tasker. But eventually, the data that the remote viewer gets sent to some place for analysis. And the analysis is where the target, the official target for that remote viewing session, is compared with the pages of data that the remote viewer collected. Now, with these people that I work with, I work with people that have been trained for about a decade or more in the use of these military or military-derived procedures, and they're really good. It's like playing the piano. You can bang on a piano and just make noise, but if you want to play in Carnegie Hall, you have to practice. So talent is part of it, but 98% of it is determination, practice, absolute commitment to becoming good. And there are very few people who have done that so far. There's much fewer than 10, I'm sorry, much fewer than 20 people on the planet that can do remote viewing at this level of competency. I work in general I normally don't do the remote viewing. I have in the past. I was trained as a remote viewer, but I was not in the military, and I was in the Peace Corps. So, but in general, I work with people who have been trained either by Lynn Buchanan. He was the remote viewer that he is the remote viewer, the primary remote viewer who trains in the CRV, or Controlled Remote Viewing Methodology, that came out of the Defense Intelligence Agency as an official program. And that has an intellectual heritage that is tied back with Ingo Swann, an artist who is a gifted psychic who figured out what his mind was doing when he was perceiving things. He figured out the procedures that would duplicate that, and that's what the DIA developed. And then I also work with Glenn Wheaton, who came out of Special Forces Intelligence, and he runs the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild. He's the director there. And he's trained a large number of people who use different procedures that are having an intellectual heritage connected to Dr. Richard Ireland. Now, the Special Forces group was not an official program. It was actually a movement within the military that later became known as the 1st Earth Battalion, and that was the subject of the movie starring Jeff Bridges and George Clooney, Men Who Stare at Goats. So that's an interesting thing. Glenn Wheaton was a consultant for that movie, and the part that was played by George Clooney was a character named Lynn, and that was a nod to Lynn Buchanan, who was in the other program, the official program at the DIA. So it was sort of composite characters that represented a number of people. But those are the people I work with, the viewers that were trained by those people. So I work with civilian remote viewers who are second and third generation remote viewers, and they are as good or better than what was 10 or 15 years ago in the military, and 10 or 15, 20 years from now, those viewers will be better than the ones we have now, and 50 years from now, those viewers will be better than the ones that are 20 years from now. So there's a growing involvement with it. My view, though, is that my activity is actually as a scientist, because I am an academic. I'm a mathematician, applied mathematician, who works at Emory University in a department of the social sciences, but I do all of my remote viewing work outside of the university, not at Emory. I do it at the Far Sight Institute, and I think I'll end with this intro just by saying what the website is so everyone knows what this is. It's farsight.org, farsight.org, because we're a nonprofit, and it's the largest science shop that exists anywhere on remote viewing. We have full-blown studies, all of the data available. We even have for people who are interested in procedures. We have an 18-hour, 24-lesson course plus a printable text. It's all free, hosted by YouTube. So it's the place to go where people see remote viewing in action and our projects, and some of the projects of remote viewing I'll be talking about in this show with you.
Awesome.
That sounds, you know,
that beats my intro.
Oh, yes. Well, I was going to say that I enjoy trying a bit of it myself, and I get good results, but I really admire people who really have learned how to do it and stick with it for the hour or for however long you have them do it. And I mean, do the remote viewing, of course, and because I get so interested to see if what I got, which is usually pretty accurate, but what I got was correct, that I haven't been able to make myself sit there the whole time and do the whole process. And
well,
so,
absolutely. You know,
you get analytically involved, you know.
Ruthann, you know what it's really like? It's like most of us have had at some point in our lives piano lessons. So most of us know how to do something with the piano, or if not piano lessons, flute, drum, whatever. Mm-hmm. But we still like to go to the concert and hear Lang Lang perform. Mm-hmm. And when he performs the piano, you say, wow, so that's what it's all about. And that's what it's like with these remote viewers. So we all have these intuitive experiences. We all have perceptions. But sometimes we really rely on the people who have dedicated their lives
Absolutely.
To this type of thing so that we can sort of see what it's all about. You know, it's very similar to the Olympics. We've all swum in water jumped in pools, dumped off the diving board. But when we go to the Olympics and see runners or swimmers or skiers or whatever, we go not to replicate our experience, but we go to see what's possible.
Yes. Well, I seriously admire them. I really do.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, yes. Yes.
But Courtney, we talked a little bit before the show about Cliff Eye. We've had him on in the past. And, for those of you who, are new listeners, you can find his interview later on, lower in the page. But, I just wanted to ask, he believes that all humans are psychic. You just mentioned that I assume you mean everybody has this ability, just needs to be trained and practiced. You think that you guys are talking about the same thing?
Well, I know Cliff. He's a great intellect. He's one of the most interesting personalities on the planet. I'm going to make a guess that we're probably talking about the same thing, because I would absolutely agree with that statement that all people are psychic. But I really wouldn't use the word psychic, because the word psychic comes with so much baggage these days. I would say that all people have the ability to perceive through these intuitive senses. And there's a theory about how this can work. Now, it's important to understand that in the dominant paradigms of mainstream physics, remote viewing is impossible. Mm-hmm. It violates all of the laws of classical Newtonian physics as well as relativistic physics, because you're taking information, perceptions. You're taking perceptions, and you're taking those perceptions, which are information, and moving them across time and space, meaning you're remote viewing or perceiving the past, present, or future, and bringing that information to the present from any, not just place and time, but also from any place across the planet, another planet, other end of the galaxy. So you're talking about the instantaneous transfer of information. Now, this scares physicists tremendously, because they have known ever since the theoretical work of Rolf Landauer that information is energy. And that has been played with through a thought experiment for a number of years, but it has recently been confirmed in laboratory experiments that when you take information, it's more than just stuff that you know. When we say of information, we just sort of think it's stuff we know, but it's much more than that. When you take in a laboratory information and destroy information, heat is released, energy is released. Hmm. So energy and information are different forms of the same thing. So E equals MC squared. C squared is a constant, speed of light squared, so it's just a scaling factor. Energy equals mass, E equals M. And knowledge or information is also a form of energy. So when we're transferring information, perceptions, from the past to the present or from the future to the present, we're taking energy across time and space, which is the same as mass across time and space. And so you're really talking about a complete violation of everything we know about the normal paradigms of physics. And so once the reality of remote viewing is formally accepted by the scientific community, an entire huge intellectual infrastructure of thinking in the mainstream sciences is going to have to collapse. And so that's what really scares them. How can this actually happen? So the big question of how remote viewing is possible has been around for quite a while and often laughed at. This summer, I was at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and in Boulder, at the meeting for the Society for Scientific Exploration, I gave a talk. And the talk was an explanation of the physics of remote viewing. Since I'm a mathematician, I speak the same language as physicists, and I gave a discussion of how remote viewing is physically possible in a way that any layman can understand. And the talk was recorded, and for those of your listeners who want to know how in the world could remote viewing actually be, on our webpage, which is www.farsight, like seeing far, farsight.org, O-R-G, if you scroll down the homepage, you'll see an embedded video called Remote Viewing and Quantum Science. that was recorded this summer.
Oh, yes.
And that is the talk that I gave it in Boulder, Colorado. And that explains the how it could possibly be phenomenon. So I encourage people to go in that direction. But it's a real huge controversy. Oh, the last thing I want to say on this is that 15, 20 years ago, everyone thought I was deluded. Because when I started the explorations into remote viewing, it was just widely ridiculed. And everyone thought I was deluded or laughed, or they laughed at me. But never, ever bet against a smart guy who never backs down. So now nobody is laughing. Nobody is laughing. Yeah, you know that movie, Waiting to Exhale, starring Whitney Houston and some others? It's like that. Everybody in academia is holding their breath, saying, oh my gosh, this could be real. And it's a waiting to exhale moment. So it's a very interesting. Since then, since we started that long ago, we've advanced a lot. I've published books, articles. We just had a recently published article in a major peer-reviewed scientific journal featuring remote viewers who, a large collection of remote viewers, who are these civilian second-generation remote viewers. And if you go to our website, farsight.org, right under a right on the homepage, just a little bit below a picture of a DVD called The Farsight Experiment. So we have, you'll see a banner saying latest peer-reviewed published research, remote viewing the future. And if you click on that, you'll see a copy of the article that came out in the Journal of Scientific Exploration. And that was a very fascinating study on describing what is necessary to accurately and reliably describe the future, which we did. One solid year's worth of experiments that were publicly verified. So that's the fascinating stuff. So you see, the science of remote viewing has advanced so much since the old days. So nobody's laughing anymore. Nobody's laughing anymore.
Well, you know, like you said that people might have thought that you were crazy or something. That reminds me of something Cliff High says, you know, just because I'm crazy doesn't mean I'm wrong.
That's interesting. But you know, the thing about it, if someone says something that's sort of nutty, two things you should ask. You should say, A, does the person have a track record of being smart? Mm-hmm. Do they have a publication record? And my publication record in mainstream venues, applied mathematics, is stellar. And then you say, will the person ever say they're sorry? Will they ever back down? And so if you get somebody who's smart and somebody who never backs down, it's really stupid to bet against that guy.
Well, I mean, I definitely understand why it would be, as you put it, scary to traditional physics and mathematics and in the whole, that whole area of study. I'm just glad that you have stuck with it and that, you know, that is becoming more mainstream, actually. I have said just the term remote viewing to people, even in the area that we live, which is rather conservative. And, I mean, in thoughts and, you know, in ideas. And I never get a blink as to, when I say what it is, even here, I get, oh, yes, I've heard of that. That's really interesting. And if I'd said that 10 years ago, I would have gotten that look, you know, that look. The one that says
absolutely.
You're really nuts.
I think it's moving into mainstream acceptance or has reached that.
If you do a Google search on the words remote viewing in quotes, so you're getting the, you know, the exact word phrasing of it, there are 3,350,000 websites dealing with that. So that tells you it's really a big deal. But the Farsight Institute is the only place among all those 3,350,000 websites where you get these full-blown studies using these second-generation remote viewers that have a huge track record, a public track record, public verification, multi-methodology, CRV, HRVG, SRV, you have multi-methodology, all highly trained viewers, and then very ingenious designs for the experimental designs also. That's what's attracting people so much. We don't do simple experiments. We do sort of complicated but really mind-twisting experiments and then have the public involved through various interesting schemes in the verification that the data were correct or are correct and we can't be cheating. If I ever do talk about the actual processes, the actual science, what we actually do for these to set these experiments up, most listeners then have to go to a chiropractor afterwards because it twists their head around so badly. To get it all straightened out is a bit of a task. Just joking, of course. But
You know, if you have, since it's reached such mainstream acceptance, it does kind of make you wonder how the dichotomy can exist of how, you know, you have mainstream acceptance of remote viewing, but psychics are laughed at. And really, like you said, they're not necessarily one and the same, but they're using the same medium, the same techniques, some of them.
Yeah, one is intuitive and the others are trained and using highly structured procedures. You know, the thing
but
is...
But either way, the core of it is... It has to be there. I mean, you can't take one. You have to accept both, is my thinking.
Yeah, but the time will come with the formal acceptance of remote viewing. The time will come when people will take intuitive psychics more seriously. But on the other hand, I want to say, Robert and Ruthann, it's a mixed bag because everybody is a psychic. And the ability to control the perceptions so that you get accurate data is no mean feat.
Yes,
you
see, I would agree with that.
Yeah, so to have this level of control is totally different from saying, okay, I'm a psychic and I'm just going to tell you what's going to happen in the future. That, you know, that just doesn't lead to anything reliable. So there's actually a theory of reliability theory, which is very valid, very important for remote viewing studies. And reliability theory actually has two components. The information gathered from an instrument, and this instrument will be, of course, the remote viewer, has to be serving two or has to be having two qualities, and that's reliability and validity. Think of your bathroom scale. You get on your bathroom scale in the morning, and let's say you actually weigh 170 pounds, but you get on the scale in the morning and it says 150. Now you get on the scale every morning and it still says 150 every morning. Well, that scale is reliable because it gives you the same number every time. But it's not valid. It's giving you the wrong number. So with remote viewing, reliability theory is important because you have to ask the question, is the information coming across reliably and is it valid? Those are two separate things.
Yes.
And so a particular psychic can be reliable in the sense that she or he is giving the same type of information all the time. The question is the information valid? So with these highly structured data collection procedures, highly trained people, we seek both reliability and validity. They have to have a history, a long published, publicly verified track record of getting the right information correct on a regular basis. For example, if they're at a beach, if the target is a beach, do they pick up the water? Do they pick the interface up between the water and the sand? Do they pick the sand? Do they get the color of the sand? Do they get that regularly all the time? And if they get it regularly, they're reliable. Do they come in with stuff like, well, I saw the water was purple, and the sand was these big, huge boulders. So, okay, so they got the water and the land and the interface, but the water was the wrong color, the sand they perceived as boulders, so it wasn't valid. So you see, remote viewers are highly trained because they have that reliability and that validity. And that's always going to be of great value. Even though once remote viewing is formally accepted in mainstream science, truly, you know, everyone's going to jump on board and say, okay, I'm a psychic too. Mm-hmm. But there will be a qualitative difference with reliability theory.
Well, what I appreciate about what you've described and what I've read about projects before is that just what you said, I mean, anyone can tell you, you know, I see whatever, and they might be right even, but the way you're doing it, you can't have, well, people can argue, but you're doing it in such a structured and controlled way that I didn't already know your cousin whoever, or I might not have guessed by the way you were standing that I was correct about this and gone from that. I like that it's scientifically done instead of just, I'm not saying I dispute what a psychic might get necessarily or not, but I like the way you do it.
Actually, Ruthann, you mentioned a really good point. You talk to a psychic and they ask them and they get something that's right. Mm-hmm. That's a good point because every psychic will get something that's right from time to time. The question is, are they going to get it with 80% accuracy each and every time? That's what we're really looking for with these people who dedicate their lives to working through these structures. Now, I am not, you know, lowering the opinion of psychics. I'm just saying that when remote viewers, some of them are incredibly gifted and have high reliability, but when the formal acceptance of remote viewing happens, there will be this idea that, okay, it's a general characteristic, so we're all psychics. So it's going to be like piano. It will be like, okay, so everybody can make noise on the piano. Mm-hmm. Who are the Lang Langs? Who are the people that you want to hear in the concert hall? And it'll come to that.
Absolutely.
But we're getting to that, and we're growing.
Moving to where we have more people playing the piano, to use that metaphor, would be a great thing, though. I mean, because from my perspective, the more people that are, I'm going to use this metaphor again, playing the piano, the more people that are remote viewing, the more the energy they're putting into something that is, I hate to say it, but productive and not destructive. The more energy that they're putting into, you know, even the amateurs at it, it's a very positive human expression and experience. And we need more of that nowadays.
Actually, we should emphasize what you just said, because right now we're in a very delicate situation because there are so few highly trained people. And if something should happen to any one of them, we have a major crisis on our hands. We're in a situation that's similar to you going with your partner to the edge of the Grand Canyon, putting blindfolds on both of you, and then starting to dance. One misstep and you're off the edge. So we have way fewer than 20 well-trained, really, really good, you know, military grade or better remote viewers. And one died last year. Dick Allgaier, who is a celebrity newscaster in Hawaii, got a concussion. He's recovering from that, fortunately, but he got a concussion this year. So we're in a situation where there are too few people. There should not be fewer than 20. We should have, you know, a few thousand to draw from, and we have to get there. There's been a problem training remote viewers in the United States, and I might just spend a few seconds talking about the problem so people know why there are so few highly trained individuals. In the United States and Europe, there's a lot of money. And so when people have learned remote viewing here, they have typically worked with the instructors for a while, but eventually they want to start their own stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing, but they want to sort of have their own dojo, their own place, and be the person in charge. And they start chasing tuition dollars. So they end up leaving the person that was training them and often taking other trained viewers with them to start up their own thing. And then a year or so down the line, the same thing happens to them. They train people and their people go off and start their own thing. So it keeps fragmenting. So the problem with training people in the United States is that there has been no connection that's lasted long enough, except for a few people who are willing to stay with the original people long enough so that they, A, get really good, and B, are willing to participate in these projects. We've had, for example, some of the most high-profile projects ever imagined done at the Farsight Institute. For example, we did a year-long project that was an actual formal test on the existence of multiple realities, parallel universes, something that you'd think came out of Star Trek or or some type of science fiction thing. But that's a rage discussion right now in mainstream physics. Young people and young professors are talking about it tremendously. It actually has its origin in a dissertation that was written and published in 1957 by Hugh Everett, who worked under John Wheeler at Princeton University. And he was widely laughed at or scoffed at the time, and the ideas were scoffed at. But it's come back big time. And even people like Brian Green have written a book just published this year, The Hidden Reality, where he talks about the existence of other universes and parallel universes. And the subject that was laughed at, that was developed by Hugh Everett in 1957, is now, its time has finally come. And we did a formal test on that called the Multiple Universes Project. And the data and the experiments for that is what was published in a leading scientific peer-reviewed journal. That is, again, you can find on our website, on the homepage. And that is one of our projects. Another one of our projects, for example, is a Mars anomaly, an anomaly on Mars, where we found a very high resolution Malin Space Science Systems JPL NASA photograph of Mars, of a horizontal spray that was connected, that was coming out of a horizontally placed nozzle, a big one, a pipe, connected to a pipeline that went to a dome. And there was a couple domes nearby. And the spray is what really caught our attention. And so we did a remote viewing project on that, where the remote viewers were sent in under totally blind conditions. They didn't know what they were told to remote view, and they had not been given any esoteric targets like that. So they thought it was just one of the normal, you know, Earth-based targets, like of all our other experiments. And they came in with beautiful sessions describing the spray, the chemical composition of the spray, the nozzle. And when they saw the domes, they went into the domes, because that's what they're trained to do. Whatever they find, they investigate. And it's a high-tech facility, and lots of people are working in it, sort of a hardship post, but that's another one of our projects. And that's starting to attract mainstream attention. For example, in a critical way, space.com just published an article about that, written by one of the editors of Skeptical Inquirer, sort of an official debunking publication, in my view. But they attacked it, and that was significant because they didn't ignore it. So they realized that the results are very persuasive and are starting to spread. And that concerns a large group of people who really are more conservative in their thinking and not willing to think outside of the box that way. Anyway, so that's a very interesting project. We also did another project on a planet that exploded between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter, causing the asteroid belt. Again, this is an idea that was raised in the 1800s by an astronomer named Olbers, widely laughed at throughout the years. But a mainstream astronomer called Thomas Van Flandern, recently deceased, who was head of his Department of Celestial Mechanics at the Naval Observatory, very mainstream, a huge publication record, he amassed an enormous amount of planetary data, clearly indicating that there was a planet between orbits of Mars and Jupiter, and that it did explode, which conflicted with the dominant paradigm, which was out of the primordial solar nebula. Some junk was left over when the planets and the sun were formed, and that's where the asteroid belt came from. So we did a test on that, the exploded planet hypothesis, and the results were totally so beautiful and unambiguous. Thomas Van Flandern was absolutely correct. There was a planet and exploded. And then we also had a major project, one that people are really talking about a lot these days, which is a climate project originally, looking for what we thought was going to be minor climate change between June 1st, 2008 and June 1st, 2013. And we were looking for maybe a little bit of snow level changes on the top of Mount Kilimanjaro, perhaps an inch rise in the sea level, maybe a few storms. And we were wondering if remote viewing might be sensitive enough to detect that. Well, we didn't have to worry about whether remote viewing would be sensitive enough, because the changes we found were absolutely right off the scale. Just unbelievable changes. All the sessions were done blind in a unbelievably fully randomized experimental design that was totally so squeaky clean you can't believe it. And the results came back that, you know, there were huge planetary changes, huge Earth changes. And so we're actually very interested now in closing that experiment, which will be June 1st, 2013, because we don't have many months to wait to sort of see if the remote viewing data on that are correct. Anyway, go ahead.
Courtney, we got to hit the break here. That's fine. We'll go ahead and take a big break. And then when we get back, I'd like to talk about some of the findings of your experiments. Talk about some of the specifics if you can, and
sure.
We'll be right back in just a moment.
Want to start a website but don't know how? No problem. The experts at OCS Solutions have you covered. We offer a complete range of internet services, from domain name registration, web hosting, and even our easy-to-use website building tool that allows you to create a website with just a few clicks and be live in minutes. Pick from thousands of templates and samples, upload your own content, or use a mix of both. It's entirely up to you. And don't worry, you won't outgrow OCS. We host websites both small and large. Domain names start at just $8 a year and come loaded with plenty of extras to get you started. Visit OCSDomains.com to learn more or call 1-800-672-8415. That's OCSDomains.com or call 1-800-672-8415.
Reiki is a Japanese relaxation technique that promotes healing and balance. It is a form of energy work that helps unblock areas that are affected by illness, stress, grief, anxiety, or other types of trauma, and it can be given in person or from the Reiki practitioner to the recipient at a distance. It is gentle and soothing and is simple to learn as well. Our bodies have the natural ability to maintain health and heal themselves when energy flows smoothly throughout our energy system. And Reiki works well either by itself or along with traditional or alternative medical treatments to help keep energy channels flowing and the mind and body in balance. I offer Reiki, the Ho Chi, and other types of energy sessions in my home in Florence, Alabama, as well as distance Reiki to any location in the world. I also teach Reiki classes from levels 1 through Karuna Reiki Master, as well as the Ho Chi. To learn more, please visit alabamareiki.com. That's Alabama, R-E-I-K-I.com. And welcome back. And we are very fortunate tonight to have with us Dr. Courtney Brown. And we were talking about, or you were talking about earth changes. And we'd love to hear more about that, please.
Well, that was one of our big projects, and originally it was started out as a rather minor project, looking for minor changes in climate that we were expecting. I was totally unconvinced back, you know, before 2008 of anything related to this Mayan calendar stuff. I'm still not convinced about the Mayan calendar stuff, but nonetheless, I just didn't take that seriously at all. And so we were looking for climate changes, and what we got back with this incredibly well-done randomized study with remote viewing is huge earth changes. So of the projects that I've mentioned, one of the things that has really troubled people coming to our website is that we have so much on the website, and they don't know where to start. They get overwhelmed, especially if they're new to us. And so what we did is we came out with a DVD just this year, called The Farsight Experiments, Volume 1. And that's what I really recommend people to start with, just to go there and in one sitting, look at the DVD and see what we're doing. You'll see all of our major projects explained, tied together, made sense out of, and that's where to go. And the 2012, or actually post-2012, remote viewing climate change, earth changes project is in there as well. And it sort of ties it together with our other stuff. So the basic idea with this earth changes thing is that the experimental design that we did involved the use of the exploration of what we might call timelines. So if you have a situation in which there are multiple realities, and again, that's a different project we did called the Multiple Universe Project, and that also is very interesting and on the DVD, The Farsight Experiments. So, but if there are a situation of multiple realities, then remote viewing something in the past is going to be much easier because you know which timeline you want. If you're looking at the sinking of the Titanic, you know that that happened in your timeline, in your time stream, in your history. So that's the exact target you'll get. But if you're looking into the future, the question is, if there are multiple realities, which future are you going to get? Because there's a constant branching as you move forward in time, according to the theory of other worlds, which is the idea that Hugh Everett started developing in 1957 in quantum mechanics and the generalization of quantum mechanics that resulted from that. And so which future are you going to get? And that's always been the problem in remote viewing the future. So remote viewing the past or the present has always been much easier than remote viewing the future. So what we did was, what I did was I designed a study that said, well, let's look at two specific timelines. One timeline where ABC happens and another timeline where XYZ happens. Now, neither one of those will be our timelines. But as we proceed towards 2013, we'll look at our timeline and say, is it more like the one where ABC happened or more like the one where XYZ happened? And that way we'll be able to say that, okay, then looks like we're evolving in a direction that's more like, say, timeline A versus timeline B. Now, for timeline A and timeline B, the two timelines that we were looking for or looking at, they were essentially defined by two questions. And that is, the timeline, we'll call this timeline A, follow the timeline in which the leadership of the mainstream global scientific establishment continues to ignore or deny the reality of the remote viewing phenomenon, and two, the existence of life not originating from Earth, even microbial life. And the timeline B was following the timeline in which by the end of 2009, which already happened, so this is not our timeline, leaders of the mainstream global scientific establishment publicly recognize the reality of the remote viewing phenomenon and the existence of life not originating from Earth. Again, even microbial life. So with these two different timelines focusing on what mainstream science does, we thought we'd see a difference in climate originally. For example, if the mainstream scientific establishment did recognize the reality of remote viewing, then world attention would be drawn to the findings that we've had. And once they were drawn to the findings that we had, it would be an enormous public sensation, an explosion of information, and the people on the planet might change the way they behave towards the planet, and that might be reflected in climate differences. That was the idea behind it. So what we did was we had essentially 9 different targets scattered all over the world. Most of them were coastal targets, like Waitupu Tuvalu, Port Jesus, Sydney Opera House in Australia. Port Jesus is in Mombasa, Kenya, in old Portuguese ruins. Mount Kilimanjaro, Tanzania, United States Congress Building, Mali International Airport in the Maldives, KITV Building in Honolulu. One of our great remote viewers, Dick Allgaier, is a celebrity newscaster at KITV, Key West, Florida, the Vehicle Assembly Building in Cape Canaveral and Merritt Island, Florida. So we had a bunch of those targets, and we were looking at them in essentially 27 different spots, meaning in 2008 on June 1st, and then June 1st, 2013, both timelines. So at 3 different locations, we were looking at those 9 targets, 3 times 9, 27 targets. And we had an unbelievably interesting randomization process that made it impossible for anyone on the Earth to know when a person was doing a 2008 or a 2013 session. So there was no possible way any viewer could have known, even I would not have known. That takes more time to explain it, so I'm not going to explain it. But the basic idea is when the results came back in, they were all brought in the first half of 2008, put up on our website, encrypted in 256-bit military-grade encryption so no one could see them, and put up on our website so the public could validate that they had the sessions, they couldn't see them, but they had them. And then we had some process that was involving the Dow Jones number and a complicated randomization scheme that happened on June 4th, 2008, that decided which target would be associated with which session. So if session 1 was supposed to describe Key West, Florida, for example, all that was decided after all the sessions were done, publicly downloaded by tens of thousands of people. So it was squeaky clean, no possibility of cheating. And when the results all came back in, all of the sessions, essentially all of the sessions for 2008 were perfect in the sense that there was no disasters. The tourists were still going to the beaches. KITV building was still operating as a TV station. Waitupu Tuvalu was still an island in the Pacific that people were happy on. Sydney Opera House was still having operas, things like that. And over 50%, well over 50% of the sessions describing 2013, June 1st, 2013, were total wipeout disasters. And that was totally unexpected. I was expecting maybe a couple more storms, a little bit more sea level, maybe a little bit less snow on the top of Mount Kilimanjaro. I wasn't expecting the total places to be wiped out with refugees fleeing the place. And but that's what the remote viewing sessions describe. Not all of them, but over 50% of them. So you go from almost zero disaster content for 2008 and way over 50% for 2013 and an absolutely perfectly done randomization process so that nobody, no viewer, no one could have known whether they were doing a 2008 or 2013 session. They didn't know the targets, first of all, and there was no way they could know what year they were doing a session for. So the results are astounding. So even if nothing happens in 2013, between now and 2013, June 1st, these results are still amazing and have to be explained. Although I do have a theory involving multiple realities, and that is, well, let me ask you, Ruthanne, what color is your shirt or blouse?
Purple.
Well, there's another reality where it's white, another one where it's pink, another one where you're interviewing somebody else, not myself. And so all of these different realities, the decision of what shirt or blouse you're wearing isn't such a big thing. It's not affecting many of the timelines. But with a bigger event, say an earthquake will affect more timelines. So some timelines will have a devastating earthquake on the same day that another timeline, just as equally real as the first one, will have a more moderate earthquake. So the bigger the event, the more timelines are affected by it. So the results from this particular project, just by chance, happen to be so humongous, they seem to be affecting the entire planet. So the theory is a event that affects the entire planet will essentially affect almost all timelines. Almost all timelines will have to squeeze through it because it's too big an event. So the theory is, and we'll find out if it's true in about just a few months, if a big event does happen, then it will be affecting essentially all timelines. And so I'm actually expecting, if my theory is correct, that these results actually will occur. You know, this also brings an important point that I want to make sure I get in during the interview, is that this dance of denial among mainstream science with respect to the remote viewing phenomenon, if these results turn out to be correct, then that issue of denial is over anyway. Because I'm all over the airways. This is a very public study. There'll be no ambiguity that remote viewing is a real phenomenon. The whole issue will be moot. And mainstream science will have the decision made for them. However, you know, if these results do turn out to be correct, then we're headed towards some very disruptive future times. And in the past, when we have had disruptive future times, it's not the end of humanity or the end of the earth, the end of the world, but it looks like it's not a good day. And, or a good period of time, and there's going to be some challenges ahead. And in the past, where there's been severe challenges, well, look at what's happened. In 1799, when we had the French Revolution, you ended up having the Reign of Terror, where they were chopping off everybody's heads, regardless of anything. All the aristocrats' heads were being rolling in the gutter. And that was only stopped by Napoleon Bonaparte. Other times of chaos, the Depression led to Hitler in Germany. And then you get Stalins and other people. So in periods of great chaos, the masses often reject not just the governmental leadership, which that you sort of know that they're going to have trouble with the governmental leadership because they sort of assume that the government's been lying all along.
Well, people have trouble with that now.
That's sort of normal. But there's also the possibility that they'll turn away from the scientific community as well, in which case we wouldn't be able to march forward and rebuild our society in an age of reason. So I'm a scientist. So I have a strong argument that mainstream science should do something now rather than wait until it's too late. Because if these earth changes do happen, the reality of remote viewing is going to be widely recognized no matter what mainstream science does. But if the mainstream science doesn't recognize the reality before these events occur, then when the events happen, it may be too late for mainstream science to get the respect of the masses back, and they may turn towards superstition and other avenues that are devoid of reason. Now, people have said, now, Courtney, why are you worried about that? They'll know that you told the truth, so you'll be able to lead. And I'll say, are you serious? I'll be a little guppy in a raging torrent. No one will be able to hear me at all. So if there's not, I'm a scientist, and scientists work with other scientists. You have to have a large group of scientists working in an age of reason to help guide the future of humanity. So there's a real self-interest in mainstream science, the future of mainstream science, for them to recognize sooner rather than later the reality of the remote viewing phenomenon. If none of these events happen, then the only thing that will happen is perhaps my reputation will be given a bit of a knock, the experiment will have failed, and I will simply have to go back to the drawing board to try to figure out what caused these results to come in the way they came in. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think that the experiment is going to be successful because I think my theory is correct. And if this does turn out the way I think it's going to turn out, mainstream science really would be better serving the entire planet if it talked about the reality of remote viewing sooner rather than later.
Yes, that is interesting. I believe that you have made a difference. I think this is being talked about, and that makes a big difference. I mean, talked about in a much more positive way than it has been in the past. And my question to you would be how you would feel about this. I've been thinking about this as we've been going along. This is energy that we're talking about. I mean, you were talking about that before. What do you think, if any, is the effect on what in the future would happen, the mere act of the remote viewing and the changes that come about because of it?
The observation, does observing it changes, or?
Yeah, the viewing these, what will happen. I mean, obviously, if you're able to get on the airwaves and you're able to help the mainstream scientific community look into this more and accept, you know, at least the possibility that it could be accurate in the right conditions and act on the climate changes before it is too late. Obviously that is the remote viewing, not the act itself, but what comes from that making a difference.
Yeah,
but
no, I don't have any element of my theory that suggests that we can change the events from happening. My theory is, in fact, that if the event is sufficiently large, mm-hmm. that all timelines will have to go through the juggernaut. And that's the theory that we're testing. Meaning, see, it's impossible to predict the future point blank. You just can't say what's going to happen in 6 years and 6 months. You just can't do that because in a situation of multiple realities, there's constant branching. You don't know which way there's an issue of free choice. You don't know which way you're going to be turning off.
Yes.
However, in a situation where a major environmental condition occurs that affects the entire planet, mm-hmm. then the branching won't be able to avoid that for any of the timelines. That's the theory. So when we're talking about the set of events, we're not talking about remote viewing changing the set of events,
right. But
it does change. And Ruth Ann, this is what's so important. It changes how we humans interact with those set of events.
Right.
What we do, how we run into those events and how we handle ourselves and how we come out the other side, that's what we have control over. And so that's what the big thing is. Many people say, well, look, why don't we find a way to avoid the events? I don't know a way to do that if my theory is correct. But what I do know is the more we talk about it, the more we change humanity mm-hmm. so that in the discussions of these, we change the nature of the way we think and the way we interact with whatever events happen. And it becomes a more positive, growing experience. It's like the Chinese word for crisis, wei ji. Mm-hmm. The word for crisis is actually two words. The first word is danger. The second word is opportunity. So if we have a crisis coming, we also have the mixture of danger and opportunity, an opportunity for great growth. So that's why it's so important. It's not that we can avoid the crisis, not that we can avoid the events, but we can change the way we interact with them so that it becomes a more positive, growing experience rather than a negative, destructive type of thing.
That's mm-hmm. that really makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
In some ways, you know, I'm reminded, I hate to reference, I don't hate to reference Cliff High's work so much, but, you know, his associate, George Uhr, he has an idea that the longer, or the larger an event, the further back in time it ripples through people's psychic impressions, and therefore manifested in his work. That sounds in the same vein as you're saying that if an event is big enough, that it encapsulates more of the alternate realities, more of them have to pass through it.
Robert, you know, the best way to think of it is that when you look at anything, let's say you look up at the stars and you have a telescope and you're looking at the planet Mars, you have a tendency to say, or everyone has a tendency to say, there is the distinct one and only Mars. But with the generalization of quantum mechanics and the experimental evidence with the remote viewing that suggests that that generalization is appropriate, there is no such thing as any one anything. Everything is what they call a probabilistic smear, meaning there is no one Mars. There's a smear of many Marses, and you're looking at one version of an infinite version, an infinite variety of versions, and that they all exist as equally as our own. So in another reality where you exist or I exist, that reality is as equal and as valid as our own. And we're now starting to understand the physics of how all those multiple versions of us can exist without bumping into one another. So the real issue with this multiple reality is, if everything is a probabilistic smear, it's also a probabilistic smear in all directions, including the direction of time. So the bigger the event, the more that event ripples through the effects not only of other realities, but of time in all those realities as well. So think of everything as a smear rather than a distinct thing with clear boundaries, and that smear extends not just in space, but in time as well.
That's a wonderful, we're out of time, but that's a wonderful thought to leave us with. It just makes you think, how can you possibly ever know something to be absolutely 100% true? You know, there's so much uncertainty, but yet there's a certainty in that uncertainty, if that makes sense.
That's,
you know, that's an odd thing to think about, but yeah. Well, Courtney, it's been wonderful having you on. I know that I've learned a lot. Ruth Ann.
Yes, absolutely.
I know you have. This has just been a wonderful show. So privileged to have you on.
It's been my pleasure, and this has been a good experience for myself also.
And awesome. We would love to have you back on at some point, so please keep that in mind.
I would be delighted.
And people, go check out his site, farsight.org, you know, buy his DVD. research takes money, and at the very least it's a donation, but being able to learn more about this fascinating topic, it's going to have profound influence on your life. You know,
the main reason for people to see the DVD is to get them on the ground running fast, quickly, to understand what we do. But on the other hand, it does support the research that we're doing as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, like we say, we've said it before, you know, and that's why I just go ahead and tell people, buy this. You know, if you probably got something, I know how much we've gotten out of it. I know our listeners have as well. Fascinating work. It would be definitely great to support that. And Courtney, I don't think people can thank you enough for assembling all this together for us. Real quick, I'd like to remind our listeners they can catch our show on BBS Radio every other Tuesday, 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific, BBS Radio Station 1. Until then, you can go to wellroundedcorners.com. Archives are a past show. They're always free. You can find us on iTunes. Just search Well-Rounded Corners. We'll have this show posted in the archives after 48 hours after it airs.
Yes, thank you. And until next time, take care.